Good morning on Tuesday, June 24th, 2014. My name is Brian Madden, and you're listening to another BrianMadden.com podcast. So thank you all for joining. I'm in San Francisco in our studio. Gabe is connected to us from his home in Omaha. How are you today, Gabe?
I'm well. And you?
Also well, thank you. And then joining us in the studio here in San Francisco, we've got two folks. We have Sridhar Mullapudi from Citrix. I actually didn't ask what your roles were. I know you as the Zen app and Zen desktop guy. Is that appropriate title?
Yeah, good. Good enough, I would say. And right now I manage the core Zen app, Zen desktop product management.
Okay. And then Rakesh Narasimhan, who is your GM and VP of Citrix's desktop products.
All accurate.
Yes.
Pleasure to be here.
Rakesh and Sridhar, thank you so much for coming in. This is we call it the special edition podcast. So this podcast is sponsored by Citrix, but we will, of course, always be ourselves, and we encourage you to be yourselves as well. So the chat is there, and feel free to send questions your way, and we're going to talk about Citrix and desktops and desktop virtualization and all that kind of stuff. You know, so Sridhar, you and I have known each other for, it's got to be more than 10 years, I would imagine, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Back in the Zen app days, and, you know, I still remember the initial CDP meetings we had kicked off back in Fort Lauderdale, I think back in 2006.
And the last time I saw you, by the way, was at Synergy on the escalator. You were going down, and I was going up, and we passed each other, and I was like, hey, I got a meeting with you. I'll see you tomorrow. I did not have a meeting with you. Because the look you gave me was like, what is this guy? And no way. I can imagine you called someone and was
he spent the next hour trying to find out when the hell is my appointment with Brian.
Yeah. And what was interesting, too, is as far as I could tell, we never had a meeting scheduled. We never talked about it. It just was in my head randomly. I don't know.
It was your intention.
Yeah.
You wanted to.
But, and Sridhar, you've been working with Zen app for a long time, because I remember when Zen desktop became a thing, and there was a while where it was kind of like Zen desktop versus Zen app, and I feel like you were intrepid still with Zen app.
Yeah, I mean, I've been with Citrix 14 years, right? Started in product development and then product management, spent a lot of time Zen app, HDX clients, and then, you know, and then we had the Zen app, Zen desktop. We kind of merged that together and then did a lot of CSP stuff as well, and now back to the core.
And Rakesh, you and I met only for the first time a few months ago.
That's right.
at lunch, which actually also you came to San Francisco for that. So
that's right.
That's now two for two that you drove to me. So
yeah, sense. We like your audience. I've liked the commentary I've read all the time. And so it's a great pleasure to be here to participate.
But you're fairly new both to your role as well as to Citrix. I think you've been there since the beginning of the year.
That's right.
You're GM for the desktop group at Citrix.
So That's right.
Zen app, Zen desktop, all of that.
You got it.
The buck stops with you.
That's right. If you have issues, I'm the guy to talk to.
Yeah. Moving forward, of course, you weren't there before January.
So any
crazy decisions that people are questioning, you can say, look, let's talk about what we want to do now.
Fair enough. I think some of it is, you know, there's some period of time when you are the new person, if you will. But I'm at that point now where it is all my issues and my opportunity, if you will.
So that's how I like it or not, they're there.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, you know, ultimately, it's customers have bought our vision, our strategy, and our products, right? So we have to make sure that we address not only where they are today, but where they need to go.
What's that like? I mean, you come into Citrix at a very high level position.
Yep.
I mean, what do you do? You know, so you're 6 months into it. Like
yep.
Your first day, you're like, hey, I'm Rakesh. Want to hang out? Like, how does that work?
Actually, it wasn't too hard of a stretch for me because, you know, Citrix, you know, I came from Microsoft, so there's a lot of, you know, processes, people, structures, very similar to Microsoft in a lot of ways. So I think that part was easy, frankly. I need the people in the organization, but I think getting your hands around how do you organize yourself to address two different motions. One is a very typical on-premise business, while you see so much of what is happening around cloud. I mean, how do you organize yourself to get around that? I was kind of really driving things in my head. And also spent a fair amount of time with customers. And I mean, if there's going to be a range of customers at Citrix, I've seen it, I think, now. and it's not very atypical. Even Microsoft had the same thing. You know, you would have, you know, companies who had 10 desktops, the companies who had, you know, 100,000 desktops. So, I mean, the variety and spectrum was there. But I think to say that I was drinking from a fire hose was kind of some of it, because there's a lot of folklore and history with Citrix, which I had to get up to speed. I still feel like I'm coming up to speed on. But being a product guy, it felt familiar in some sense to be at Citrix, because that's the core of what the company does. So that part, it was relatively an easier transition for me.
It's interesting because, you know, Citrix is at a point now, like every software company, where, you know, for 25 years, essentially, Citrix has been selling boxed on-premises software that you download and install onto the servers that are in your building, or even if your servers are in the cloud, it's just a colo that they're your servers, just someone else's. But they're servers, they're things, you know?
Yep.
And now you have to sort of figure out how you make the software work for, you know, on demand, on service, you know, scalable, like with sort of cloud type platforms, where servers aren't really the
fungible unit
to measure anymore. Yep. While at the same time not pissing off all the customers who still are like, I'm going to buy my own servers and they're going to be made out of metal and I'm going to touch them and I want software to run on them.
Yep, yep.
So I imagine like
It's not very different to what is happening in general to most companies and of course, customers, right? Because that's the situation they face. They've made investments that run their companies around on-premises. And there's this interest to do things in the cloud and the way of doing things in the cloud. And I think, you know, we explained at Synergy some of that. And I think we have the opportunity to, frankly, take our customers from the premises model to the cloud model. I think we have a better model, frankly.
Yeah. And you know, the other point is, you know, goal is to make them successful, whether they want to do it on-prem or cloud, and have a smooth migration.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I really like that. I mean, so I wrote a blog, let's say, 2 or 3 months ago, where I think, I don't know if I said Citrix has to buy a DAS provider, or if I ask the question in a very leading way, like, is it time that Citrix has to buy a DAS provider to compete against, you know, what other software companies are doing in the cloud and that kind of stuff?
And I think it started off by saying, you know, Citrix should get into the DAS space and host their own desktops. And then the comments took it in the direction of, Citrix doesn't have the ability to do that. They don't have the infrastructure to pull that off. So in order for them to do that, they would have to acquire a service provider.
Yeah, and it couldn't be just DAS, because you need all the other components to go with it. Where I'm going with this is, after Synergy and you started talking about Citrix Workspace Services, I was like, oh, right.
Right.
Thank you for not buying a DAS company.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because I really love this concept that, you know, moving forward, even if you have on-premises physical hardware and software that you want to own and buy in the traditional way, even if that's all on-premises, you still can run it as if it were a cloud, essentially. You know, the software is smart enough to not really care about physical boxes, and it can sort of grow and shrink and be flexible as needed. And then if you want to run that same software in the cloud, you can do that. If you want to have a hybrid and connect them together, you can do that. If you want to have it just on your own and not have to talk to the cloud, you can do that. But the idea is sort of transforming the software so that it can, you know, be used in that model. And then you kind of truly can say, well, if you want to buy from a cloud provider, then go and do that. We don't really care. Our software just works everywhere.
That's right.
I'm really glad that came out, I guess.
Well, we struggle with it, right? I mean, it's the thing that we get asked a lot about, questions like, okay, so are you guys going to be a public cloud provider? And if you look at the history of the company, and if you look at what we're good at, I think the Citrix layer, if you will, of the software that needs to get set up for people to be able to provide whatever you need, whether it's apps or desktops or data, I think that's the part that we were good at on premises. So we were trying to figure out, how would we help our customers get there while making sure that it's easier for our partners to do that Citrix layer in a way that the customers are ready for. We didn't presume that there is one right model, because, you know this, you've been in the industry long enough, all of us have, where whatever the new term is doesn't flip overnight. There's a transition period. And people will, I mean, there's not a day that I meet customers where I get the spectrum, where they tell me, I'm good with XenApp, I don't want to do anything about this cloud thing, I don't care. Then I have hospitals who'll tell me, hey, I just really want to make this simple. I'll punch out n number of desktops for my users in public cloud. I'm okay with it. I want you to do it. So there is that spectrum, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't make customers have to make a very hard choice around where to go from to. And that's why our control plane being in CWS, in public cloud, and offering you choice of whether running on-premises the actual workload or running it in public cloud or do it in hybrid mode, that made the most sense to us because that's what we are good at. It didn't make sense for us to be the infrastructure as a service business, which you had to be on-premises if you think about it, right? All the provisioning you had to do.
That's true, yeah. And that's interesting because that was another thing that we wrote about where, by moving, we're talking, I guess, specifically about Zend App and Zend Desktop, but by moving that to a more, I'm using like air quotes, a cloud infrastructure, all that provisioning and that like low-end plumbing, you just have that. Like the whatever cloud platform you're using, whether it's Azure or vCloud or
AWS,
it doesn't matter. They do that already, so you don't have to be in that business.
And it's their core competency.
Yeah, because they can do it better than you because that's all they do, and they do it tons of billion.
That's right.
Which is the same thing about not becoming a DaaS provider. Like look at if you have to sell infrastructure that you own, you can't compete with it. Like Microsoft can't even compete against AWS. Like what chance does Citrix have, you know? So
just look at the discussion on IaaS. It's the discussion is this is the 42nd or 43rd price drop.
Right, right.
I'm just not sure. Being in the software business all my life, I'm just not sure that's the core competency we want to be in.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, in fact, that's good for us because it reduces the cost of the infrastructure itself, right? I mean, we really don't, and provides value for customers, which is everything else that sits on top of it. So.
Well, I don't know if this is happening because I'm getting old. I mean,
probably, if you have to say that.
Next year is my 20th year in the industry. So, like, I'm not as fresh as I once was. 10 years ago, if I heard a vendor say to me, oh, we're glad that someone else is doing this because now we don't have to worry about it. Like, I would have thought that was crap. Like, what vendors say when a competitor comes out in the market and they're like, oh, this is great, just validated the market. Or like, you know, like when Mobile Iron, when VMware bought AirWatch, and then Mobile Iron's like, well, this is fantastic. It you know, validates the market. And we're like, yeah, you guys are all by yourselves and there's no one left to buy you. So it's, but in this case, it's true because I don't want, you know, like, sweetheart, when you go back to Lauderdale, I don't want you to be in a freaking PVS meeting and figure out what's the best way to push bits down.
I don't know. Are you still in those meetings?
How we use PVS from the cloud.
Yeah, please don't do that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I want you to focus on, like, what do you – like, what does Zend Desktop and Zend App really need to do? And it's like an abstraction layer, like in a sort of OSI model. Like, before you had to build everything because – there wasn't, like, you know, you were going into bare metal. And now, if all these infrastructure, like, all you got to do is build the interfaces to these things. And, you know, yes, it's a different API call to AWS to spawn an instance versus vCloud. But fundamentally, I don't want you worrying about that. I want you making HDX and app publishing and clients and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Now, in the on-prem world and stuff, obviously a lot of our focus innovation has been supporting the hypervisors, the provisioning, the infrastructure. I mean, it's a lot of heavy lifting work, right? So it's glad that kind of in the cloud world, we can kind of move on to the other value add stuff, HGX receivers, help you manage the different workloads, everything else, make the process really simple. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this whole thing, so CWS, Citrix Workspace Services, this is, Rakesh, as you were saying, where, I mean, I wrote this article that says, you know, CWS is the future of Zend App and Zend Desktop. If you want to see what Zend App, you know, I'll say like Zend App version 10 looks like. I mean, this is maybe not what, you know, the version next summer looks like or whatever. But if you want to go, say, 5 years in the future and look at what does Zend App look like in that world, to me, that is CWS. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think it certainly is directionally correct. I think we will continue to invest, obviously, on-premises software until customers ask us not to. It's not very different from you take services at Microsoft. It's not like Microsoft has stopped developing Windows Server.
Yeah, right.
Because there's a market for that, and services at the end of the day still are powered by servers, some kind of servers. So I think you will see us certainly take a position where we do a lot of development for cloud first, obviously. But there's a lot of work still left to be done for us to innovate on XenApp, which, frankly, we need to catch up on and do better at than ever before. I think we'll do that. The other thing is, you know, people talk about cloud a little bit loosely, but I want to separate a couple of different things, which is today you run a XenApp, Zen Desktop, I'll just call it on-premises installation. There is certainly the idea of consuming it as, you know, with all the cloud attributes of elasticity, provisioning becoming easier, user management becoming automatic, being able to connect to different things automatically. Those are all things that today still people have to do manually. So if you said there is a desire for customers to operate as an Zen Desktop farm, like an Elastic Cloud on-premises, we still have work to do. We certainly delivered one of those instances in Merlin just recently to be able to publish desktops and apps into public clouds and cloud platform and soon Azure. But I think that's just one part of going to public. But to be able to operate on premises as if it's a cloud service that is running, I think it's a huge desire on part of a lot of customers I've talked to. So I think there's work to be done with XenApp and desktop already. And then there's the work that we want to enable CWS, as you correctly pointed out, which is directionally that we think is going to be the place people will go to. So automating that Citrix layer today, which is like installation of software, setup, config, making that a lot more cloud-like is the direction we're heading in.
And I guess you almost have to do that sort of faster than Microsoft, because Microsoft is going that direction with Windows Server, but it's not, it doesn't do that yet, and
correct,
who knows when it does and everything. And I imagine your case, you're like, well, we need to be there like way faster than
Microsoft
is doing.
Absolutely. But I think we have a little bit of an easier time to argue because they truly are infrastructure software, server, abstracting networks, abstracting storage. It's not that we don't have that complexity. We sit on top of it. So automating our layer is relatively easier, I would argue, than what Microsoft has to go through. In fact, even if you look at what Server Tools there is doing is developing features for Azure first and then bringing them on to server. That makes sense because of the sort of things that they have to invest in. So it's an investment choice. I think I'll contrast that with us, which is I don't think it's a choice for us to say we only do the cloud thing first. Our install base is on-premises. We have to take them to the cloud at the speed that they're at. So we could innovate faster.
That's a good point because you have a billion-plus dollar business of on-premises XenApp and Zen Desktop customers today. So
correct,
you can't just be like, hey, guys, sorry, we're going to the cloud now. See you there.
And not everybody's ready, right? So we all. So it's not even the big difference is you ship something on-premises. It's not just that you're done shipping. You could feel good about that as a product organization. There's the receiving it at the customer site and then setting it up and then having that in a pilot and then rollout and then production. That lag time is huge. You don't have that in cloud, right? Relatively, you're able to go play with it and upgrade it automatically and use it. But I think that's a very different customer set. Our existing customers still aren't ready, I think, to go there. I mean, they tell us what sort of things they would like. They like some of those extending, flexing out features because they're playing with it as well. But our partners certainly we hear because, you know, our CSP channel, they're ready to take this cloud thing right down.
Well, and I guess for them, I'm curious about how many of them have customers beating down their door or if they think that if they have this cloud thing to offer that they're going to suddenly make all these deals. Because I wonder still, like, I think the CSPs maybe, I'm speaking very broadly, are really, really, really excited about all these cloud offerings, but I'm curious about whether the market's actually there for them today. It'll be there. But.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk a little bit about that. And if you're a CSP and you kind of want to start a CSP business or do that today, it's pretty capital intensive, right? Because you're kind of buying the hardware, the infrastructure, and there's a whole risk, and you got to build a pipeline and everything else. Now with the cloud model, what we are literally telling them is there's a faster route to market, so they can kind of focus on the services, the customers, and now worry about hardware infrastructure. Because, you know, we talked to a lot of CSPs, and one of the challenges has always been, yes, you know, we have a great set of CSP customer base who's doing it, but to grow, it is hardware capital intensive, right? I think with the cloud model, they actually have more choice, and so it's better, I think.
I want to take a step back a little bit. Rakesh, you mentioned Merlin, and for people who are not familiar with that term, Sridhar's probably a question for you. Just give us 30 seconds. What is Merlin?
Yeah, so you know, Merlin is the last release of Zenapp Zen Desktop, or I should say the current product, which is Zenapp 7.5 and Zen Desktop 7.5. And one of the core value propositions in Project Merlin was the ability to use either an AWS public cloud infrastructure or cloud platform, whether you're running it on-prem or in a telco kind of a cloud platform. You can spin up your desktops, workloads, you know, easy flexing, plus integrate that with your existing NetScaler storefront, so you kind of still have a unified user experience. So that was a great first step for letting our customers kind of play in the public cloud.
And that's so, like, if I download, this is Zenapp thing, or is it Zenapp and Zen Desktop?
This is both Zenapp and Zen Desktop, yeah. So it's built on the new FMA architecture, right? So it's both apps and desktops, all FlexCast models, like VDI, RDS, and everything.
And so if I want to have that in AWS, it's that integration is done.
Yeah.
Right. Click.
Yeah, essentially you create a site. I mean, all the studio integration, the MCS integration, all that is there. It's just like you pick your AWS, you know, your provider, you get all the machines you want, you spin up a bunch of machines, you create a site, and then you aggregate using Storefront and Scalar. So, yeah.
Do you think, this is new question, sort of new topic, do you think we're going to get to the point where, like right now, we're still focusing on servers, and even if they're virtual servers in the cloud, they're not, you know, obviously physical things, but it's still like I have X number of Zen app servers that are hosting sessions, or X number of Zen desktop VMs, that kind of thing. Like, there's this sort of other aspect to this, which is fundamentally people care about the applications. I mean, and that you could break that down to fundamental IP, like in IT. Like, no one cares about desktops besides desktop IT folks.
Admins.
But like, you know, yeah, desktop admins, exactly. But like, fundamentally, like, even me, I don't care. Like, I care about my apps. And we've obviously that Citrix has been leading with published apps since WinFrame had published apps, you know. And Microsoft got into that more recently. VMware now finally saw the light in the past week. How do the apps sort of tie into this? Like, do you think we'll get to the point where we're just sort of adding apps into these clouds, and everything you're doing behind the scenes is sort of automatic? Or do you feel like we're going to be, I don't know what I'm asking exactly. I want to talk about apps.
Okay, so yeah. Let me start by saying, I think it's a fair point, and the thing that, at least in all my career, I've noticed is it's always been about the apps. You go to any company, if you could, even Oracle, you know, they had a database business, but if you look at how the company really expanded its apps businesses took off, and then it was the reason why it dragged along with it database. Same thing with Microsoft. Until Office came along, like the operating system exploded once Office came along. It was the app that people wanted. And so similarly, the server side, Exchange, SQL, all those were server apps at Microsoft, it's considered, right? But then it dragged along the rest of the business, if you will. On our side, I think there's these two things. One is there's today's need for customers to bring their existing applications and making it available on any device, anywhere. That's a very classic scenario we've always supported. Then there's the class of users who really want a desktop because they want a PC management solution, if you will. And so I don't want to be running around with all these physical hardware. I want to just make them desktops. This is something that all of you know. The user base knows that. But I think there's the other class of apps, which is, hey, I develop a new app, and it's going to be natively available on all these devices, regardless of operating system. The thing that binds them together is the cloud. That's the other model, which, you know, lots of people are doing, which is even Office, for example, will natively take a subscription, and then you use iOS, Android, Mac, Windows versions of software. So I think the biggest advantage we have is we're not making customers to make a choice in one of those architectures. These are all architectural changes that have happened over time. And for us, we've always, with Zenapp, and this is the thing that surprised me when I first came on board, is how much of what I remember Citrix was always about Zenapp and the application, which for a little bit, I thought we forgot how important that was for customers, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously VDI and kind of brought the whole desktop as, but I think desktop I always thought as more a container, right? I mean, apps kind of drag desktop, not the other way around.
Yeah.
It's not, so I think industry as a whole probably over-rotated a little bit more on VDI and desktop use case. Now, obviously, that was a PC replacement, simplified, kind of makes a lot of sense, kind of a model. But with the advent of mobile devices and apps and, you know, where, you know, you want to get them on any device, doesn't matter whether it's a SaaS application, I think apps is still probably the big need for a majority of our customers. Now, there's always a case for desktops, where you want to have that container for a lot of users, and that makes a lot of sense, but I think apps are critical.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a good point. And it always has been about the apps, but it kind of took the mobile, just the explosion in mobile and the concept of an app to sort of make us remember that as well, saying, hey, wait, all we care about is the app and the data. We don't really need the desktop to go along with that.
Because it's the container, right? I mean, the container keeps changing, but the app and the data still is the most relevant part.
And this is the kind of thing, too, if you guys and your 10,000 coworkers, or I don't know, how big is Citrix? I don't even know. Thousands.
Yeah, probably 9,000.
I don't know.
That's right.
If you two and your thousands of coworkers do your jobs right, then the container has the same kind of flexibility as everything else. Because fundamentally, it doesn't really matter whether that container is an RDS8 session on ZenApp or a VDI instance or whatever. It's just, I as an IT pro, have an app I need to install, manage, configure, deliver, and it's going to spin up as many copies as it needs. And I sort of look at it as like the Citrix infrastructure, you do whatever you got to do down there to make that happen. And that's kind of as the platforms evolve and kind of get smarter, I think it will almost abstract that away a little bit.
Yes, it is. I just don't know fully yet if we'll be able to abstract all the licensing. but we can always hope, right?
That's the closest we'll get to a licensing burn on this podcast.
How did we So part two of our podcast, let's talk about Windows licensing. Rakesh, you came from Microsoft. Ironically, you came from the Azure group, which actually has proper license. Like, that's the only part of Microsoft that's licensed, like, in a sane way, because they have
right.
to.
That's right. It is. So
don't think it wouldn't be if there wasn't so much competition already.
Yeah, if they could figure out how to.
Also, let's not forget, we did learn a lot, right? We did learn a lot when I was there. There was a lot of, I think people presume things about the licensing situation. I think there's, Microsoft should talk about that. But I think when you make a product that's in demand, that has a perfectly good business model, it's not like people go out and expect other companies which are leading in that front to make that free or make it much more easier. There's intellectual property. They really feel that they've innovated and they deserve the business, and there's no need to do this. I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
It's funny, too, how and I'm guilty of this myself, how it's very easy for people to criticize like licensing and pricing decisions until they're in the position of having something to sell and protect.
If you're a search company, would you really ask them to make their things free because everything else is free? Would you do that?
Yeah, and you can be having like the torches and beating down the door wanting it until you work there and you're like, what? No, that's my paycheck. Of course we're still charging for it. And like a lot of stuff. Like,
that's right.
So
licensing has two parts to it. There's just the business model, and then there's the how do you make it easier for customers? I think that's the place where I think we can give a lot of stick to all the folks that we work with, which is, hey, you got to make this easier for customers to be able to, A, consume, B, deploy, manage, and upgrade. I mean, that experience has got to be easier. I think that's historically where we have come in and been able to at least try to do that. The licensing part one still is something that we work on.
Well, there's licensing the concept and licensing the sort of implementation.
Yep.
And unfortunately, so you have like in Citrix, you've got multiple products, you've got a bunch of different editions, you've got different versions of everything, and the matrix of upgrade paths and that kind of stuff gets super complex super fast. But separate that from like the philosophical, like, hey, you can license it per user or per device, take a pick.
Yep.
And that seems like, and that's been like that way since day one.
That's correct.
And that with Citrix, and that seems fine to me. Like, just take your pick, and then obviously, if you bought some in this quarter and some in that quarter, and there's all those things to figure out, and you get this discount, that's a whole separate conversation. But
yeah. It works. That part works just fine.
I like the idea that I can say I have 1,000 employees. I'm paying you for each of those employees, and they're going to do whatever they do.
That's right.
And we're covered.
Yep.
So
I think those are all the right conversation to have. Increasingly with the device explosion, with the cloud availability, I think that model where people consume what they need, when they need, where they need it, I think is here. It's not something that is theory or something that we think will happen. It's here.
And it's funny because Citrix has been providing – I mean, my first book about Citrix I wrote now 13 years ago. Oh, man.
Metaframe, with
the scientists on the cover, even before the one with the orange on it.
Are you trying to prove to us that you've been working on this for too long a time?
Excuse me while I...
Yeah, excuse me while I demonstrate my experience. But, you know, because even back then, we were talking about, like, that was when .NET and the whole web was blowing up, and web apps were the first thing, and this is before ASPs even. And the idea was that you could use Citrix software to, like, webify your existing old school kind of, you know, dumb, boring apps, as we call them, your Windows business apps, which were not written for the cloud. And it's interesting that that's what Citrix was doing. I mean, you know, I think in the early days, people use Citrix for, like, maybe performance enhancement of, like, featured applications. But even in the 90s, it already became, oh, my gosh, now this app can just run, and I connect it from any device. And this is before, you know, Citrix did that whole, like, access anywhere and the any strategy. That was, like, 2003 even. So this is even 5 years before that. It was always about, I've got these dumb, boring apps, and I can use them from any device. And that just, like, so that kind of the DNA of Zen App, it has been doing that for all these years. And so I feel like a lot of people like me who are sort of like Citrix professionals and been working in this space a long time, you know, we in the past 5 years have read all the news on, like, the mainstream sites like TechCrunch and these other, like, main, like, you know, like, tech sites where they start talking about this future of everything's in the cloud and you can access from anywhere. And I'm like, we've been doing this for a long time.
Frankly, I think, you know, that is partially part of the frustration on the part of the product organization, I think, in the company. It's like, we've been doing this for a long time. Like, we should tell the world about it.
Yeah.
And I think we went through a phase where we got a lot more inward focused. And I think, you know, we did the work, but we really didn't talk about it as much. And then there wasn't a lot of competition. There was not a lot of understanding, if you will. But today's a different world. And I think we're trying to reestablish a connection back to the audience to make sure two things. One is, not only are we listening to them, the feedback that they give us is very valuable. In fact, it should drive our product strategy. And two is, you know, we want to make sure there's a forum for people to integrate with us, which goes back to the thing we said, which is, I think we've always been doing it, but I'm not sure we explained that story well. The Citrix core audience knew that, but the rest of the world didn't, especially when we were transitioning from a on-premises sort of architecture to a cloud-based architecture. I think that story, I'm not sure, got told. And so we are beginning that discussion even as we speak.
Yeah, it's tough because, that's as you say, a lot of times people react on decisions that are made just sort of like in a guttural way. And then, but if you hear sort of story, it's like, well, look at this. Like, I remember my perfect example of this was when Citrix, Metaframe 1 or 1.8, like, dropped support for, like, Service Pack 4 on NT, like, 4, something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wrote this huge post, and I was like, I can't believe they're leaving, they're screwing all these customers and this kind of stuff. And I think with Mark Palumbo was the product manager back then, and was like, yeah, we talked to there's 8 customers that have this, and we talked to them, and they're all fine. So, like, it's not, and I'm like, oh, well, you should have said that before pissant bloggers went crazy with it.
But it's true, though, right? It's true. I mean, a lot of the features get airtime, but you'd be surprised how many of those actually don't mean that big of an issue for customers.
And is this the case, like, you know, so we talk about, there's this bridge between sort of the old on-premises world and this new sort of, I want to call it cloud world because that suggests that everything's in the public cloud. I don't mean it like that, but the old on-premises, more infrastructure-focused world versus the newer world where the platform does all the stuff and then Citrix can kind of ride on top of that. So there's this, we're in the rocky period of transition because right now you literally have the same, like, you have to build products that make the old school, we will never put anything in the cloud, people happy, and we're installing things on metal boxes, to the medium people who are like, we're going to run, like, vSphere in our environment and make our own internal infrastructure and it's going to all operate as a service, to people who are saying, I'm going to run it all on AWS. And you have to make, you know, like, essentially one product that works for all of them, because it's going to be a 5-year period as we're transitioning from, you know, the metal box world to the sort of everything as a service world.
Right.
And so you know, you mentioned like with Merlin and the features in Zenup and Zendesk 7.5 is like that's a sort of starting point. How do you help people along with that? Because I think there's a lot of reaction. Like if you look at this, like Zenup 6.5 to 7.5, a lot of people are like, oh, they took out features that are screwing us. And it's like, well, no, hang on. You know, we're going to FMA, IMA to FMA, and there's a lot of that sort of stuff out there. And it's not like 6.5 is going away. If it still works, just sit tight, you know, that sort of thing. But imagine this kind of stuff is going to come up more and more often as you're trying to help people transition from like the older world to the newer world.
Yeah, I mean, if you really think about it, I think we are on probably our third or fourth generation architecture, right? I mean, we have FMA, we have IMA, and then even before the browser-based and probably something else in the 90s, which I was not even part of, right? So there's a lot of thing, and the thinking behind the whole FMA architecture was to unify the platform for, you know, applications and desktops, plus make it easy for customers to move to the cloud. So, you know, that was the thinking behind kind of, you know, aligning behind that single architecture. Now, I think what we haven't done a good job at, which is what caused a lot of problems, is kind of transitioning a platform architecture, right? A lot of our customers are on one architecture, and when you talk to them about a new architecture and the benefits of that, both for on-prem and cloud, it takes a while for customers to migrate. It's a migration, and I think we haven't done a good job kind of telling customers what the strategy behind that was and probably also not really managing the migration well. So customers are like, look, I'm on this platform with all this functionality. You're building all this great stuff, good for on-prem, simplified, everything one platform, good for cloud and everything else, but, you know, not all the functionality are there, right? So I think that was the thing that we missed.
It's, and for those listening who don't know what the heck we're talking about, like this, the platform, I don't know a good analogy. Maybe this is like an NT4 domain to Active Directory or something like that. Like
similar.
It's the back end. This isn't a main feature. It's not a checkbox. Like yeah. I get all these features. It's like how the back end servers talk to each other, where they store their configurations, how they update each other, how all that. It's like the back end.
Yeah, how does management happen? How does monitoring happen? Configuration, policies, is it, you know, all one platform or is it multiple platforms? So.
And so this the new one, FMA, which is what, Flex Management?
Flexible Management Architecture, yeah.
So this new system, that came out in like Zen Desktop 5 or something like that originally, right?
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago. It's been in the works for almost 5-6 years, right? Started off in Zen Desktop and then, you know, again, I'll go back. A lot of our customers who are, you know, both Zenabs and desktop customers, one of the common requests was, like, look, I want single farm, single site, single architecture, simplified management monitoring. Right? That's the reason why we kind of went that approach. I think it's just a transition.
It took longer.
It took longer than what we anticipated.
Well, it's interesting because if you think about it, so, you know, you had MetaFrame, then became, you know, Zenab product with a huge install base and was the lion's share of your revenue. Based on this IMA backend, you know, platform architecture. And then when you got into Zen Desktop, it was sort of a green field, like you're making a new product from scratch, and it's like, hey, let's build a new backend platform architecture that's better for today's world. And just, I mean, it's, you know, 10 years newer. So, yeah. But then you kind of got parallel development, and then you sort of, and that was 5 years ago, and now you get to the point where it's like, okay, so now we're in this awkward position where, you know, we have to get Zenup onto FMA because that, A, will unify it, as you say, and have them both Zenup and Zendesk the same.
Yep.
But and also just it's a much more newer and modern, like appropriate for today's world kind of architecture. But at the same time, now you're like, so, you know, we got these these existing Zenup customers that we have to, you know, like it. Like IMA has to end. It has to die at some point. It's like it's old.
I mean, yeah, I mean, first of all, we love both IMA and FMA. Right?
That's right.
There's really nothing wrong with the platforms, but our goal behind FMA was to unify the platform because we kind of heard it loud and clear from customers,
yeah.
From tech community, everybody saying like, look, it's one product, one platform. You got to do that, simplify that, right? So that was kind of the strategy behind that. So in fact, we've done a lot of work to make IMA FMA the best platform, right? Easier, customers use it all the time. And so, you know, now we're in a stage where we're saying, look, IMA is still great. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you're doing, and there's still Zenup 6.5 available for customers for like 2 more years. And we've been investing a lot over the past year and a half to kind of migrate some of that functionality. So, you know, we're pretty confident that, you know, customers will see the value and kind of move to FMA with upcoming releases and stuff. So there's...
Right, I think there's two things I'll add to that, which is, one, I'll go back to the question you had earlier. But specifically, I think whenever you make these platform changes, there's a time where customers migrate to it. And the benefits of that is even a little bit out there, right? So we made the transition. I think customers are getting those now, but Arthur will complete the picture fully, in which case I think the Zen Desktop journey to get working on FMA will complete. And then you'll see customers obviously benefit from that. So that's just one completion of the migration. The question you asked earlier about is, hey, this is really a little bit different, which is you have an on-premises architecture and you're building to a new generation, and then you have a cloud deliverable, if you will. It's a fair question, and it's something that I think pretty much any software company will have to go through, which is on-premises you have a benefit, which is time. You don't have to be necessarily as, you know, I'll call it revision happy. You don't have to produce a ton of revisions very often.
What do you mean? You mean just because you can sort of set it and forget it and...
Partly, but even in the software development within the company, the way you develop it is you could have a release every year. Now, I'll tell you, there's enough customers who tell me, is like, stop producing those releases. I just can't take them. I just can't get them into my infrastructure. Because you produce a version, it takes me like a year out for me to fully deploy the thing. So there's that sort of customers. But I'm saying at a high level, you know, a waterfall model of developing software on-premises still works. We may produce releases quarterly, monthly, whatever, pick your period, that'll still work. Whereas cloud is agile. You put a build out every day. You could put out a functionality out there, test it out, see how it's working, do the testing. The analytics on it can inform you as to how useful it is or not. You have a lot more direct visibility, completely different models of developing software.
And so even if you use Waterfall in the cloud, you might still break stuff because, like,
that's
your
right.
software, you said, okay, I just did this once. Next release is now 12 months from now. And the cloud platform is, like, chugging ahead. And all of a sudden you're like, well, they just turned off the interface that I use. So
that's right.
Apparently.
So you see, yeah, there's always that
tension.
Yeah,
you just can't do it. Yeah, you just can't do it. I mean, otherwise you're maintaining separate clouds.
Correct.
Do you remember, I think Desktone was actually running a few platforms at a time just because they had the old – remember, they changed their they changed their model a few times, and so they were running two or three different models at one point just to support legacy customers, which I just can't imagine having to maintain all that.
This is there's an article in here about this. I never thought about this, but the fact that it is – I mean, it is two completely different adoption and migration models, the fact that
– Right, but which really means in engineering you have to organize differently to do this. I mean, this is not, by the way, this is not the first time we're doing it. Other people have done it as well.
Yeah.
Certainly companies like Microsoft, Oracle, they do it today. So I think, you know, if you think about database as a service, it is an on-premise business. It's a big business at Microsoft, but they also have database as a service that is a cloud service that has a full DevOps team, full operational team working on it, right? It's the same set of people who are doing it. So my point is we are organized to do that very same thing so that if you had to make a change in the VDA, there's a requirement that you could do for cloud, which is at a different schedule, different pace, and support for it than making a VDA change for the Zen Desktop team for the Arthur release, if you will. Both of them are different times. Their testing cycle is different.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to add to what Rakesh said, I mean, we're doing agile, you know, for obviously for the cloud as well as the on-premise stuff, but the you know, the release cycle and when customers adopt and that feedback is kind of different in both models, right? In a cloud workspace services, it's, you know, you release it, customers will immediately get it, and you kind of get the feedback and kind of going. On the on-prem, you still are agile in terms of how you're developing the product, but by the time you kind of get the release out, customers adopt, it's a much longer cycle.
So help me understand how this applies to Citrix, because this is all, like, I've never thought of any of this kind of stuff before, so I'm just, like, stream of consciousness, I guess. Let's take Microsoft, for example. I understand they have, like, SQL for Azure, or whatever they call it.
SQL Azure.
And then,
well, it's Azure Data Services now.
So, yeah, Azure Data Services, and then on-prem SQL Server.
Right.
The same, they have hosted, you know, Exchange, quote-unquote, and they have on-prem Exchange. And I understand that those are really, like, two different products, maybe a lot of the same back in infrastructure, but I can see how they could sort of at the same time maintain an agile development for their cloud-based services and a waterfall development for their traditional stuff? Because they're two different products, really.
Not in SQL's case, but Exchange, yeah. But even that has changed now.
So that's my question, because in your case, you don't have two different products, right? Your goal, I think, is to try to make Zen App and Zen Desktop so that it's the same product that runs on the cloud
over time. Yeah. Because remember something, there's always this tension. It's a fair question on the development methodology. But the other way to ask the question really is, would you really want a full Zen App, Zen Desktop in the cloud? Not necessarily, because it's a completely different scenario. Why would you bring back all the things that Zen App, Zen Desktop have to do on premises because there were a lot of presumptions made about the technology components that you need. For example, provisioning. You don't have to do that anymore, right? So there's a lot of artifact of on-premises in the product architecture that you don't bring along with you. Hopefully you don't. So then the question is, how quickly can I have an app up and running in a desktop that you provision in CWS? I think that's the interesting question. Not how you do it, but how quickly can you get it done? So I think there things will differ. That's why I'm saying that there's a different way of developing software for on-premises versus in cloud. In the example that you quoted about SQL, the easy thing was the engine, SQL engine, was the same. They just had a different branch to basically go develop software which would have multiple releases with specific functionality that would be released to the cloud.
So in the world of Citrix, how does this actually boil down? Like, so you've got your sort of waterfall on-premises Zen App, Zen Desktop of today. Are you talking about this more agile future?
Yep.
This is the, I'm gonna, for lack of a better word, like the Zen App plugin for CWS?
Yeah.
So talking about two different products?
I think it would be the, for customers, it wouldn't feel like a different product as much as within the team. We would think of that as a different release. And the release gets this, as you mentioned, plugin.
And where does that release go?
It goes right through CWS. So we deliver into a train that is CWS.
Okay.
And remember the architecture? They had a control plane,
yeah.
And then they had resource zones.
Yeah.
Resource zone is where you get your desktop.
So
it will go into that train.
So in some future version, like let's say a world where CWS exists as a shipping, well, I'm
it
using
is.
The old words, but, so like in that world, there is a version of Zen Desktop that is, the older waterfall on-premises
sure.
geared Zen Desktop. And then the Zen Desktop that plugs into CWS is the more agile.
Sure.
And obviously as a customer, I can buy either
one.
And I imagine for licensing, it doesn't matter probably.
We want to make it easier, right?
Yeah.
We want to make it easier to the customer because really that's part of the issue, right? Hey, I already bought all these licenses from you guys, and we want those people to use up all the licenses. It's an on-premise installation. They have it working just fine. But for certain cases, they want to flex out to the public cloud or even run it in a different data center. We want to enable them to use the licenses, and if they don't have enough, we'll sell them more licenses.
I have not been looking at the questions, Gabe. Have you?
I have not. It's a good conversation.
that happens really. By the way, Kevin Goodman, I saw you called me. I'm busy. I'll call you back. it's interesting. So now CWS is still that was announced at Synergy as like this is sort of our future direction.
Yep.
So I think it's Synergy. You I'm speaking now of the company, not you two guys. But Citrix said that we'll see pieces of that this year.
Yep.
But I imagine all because there's so much stuff that plugs into CWS too. So I imagine it's going to be years before everything is kind of there. But what?
I don't think it's years. Hopefully it's not yours. We certainly have the right teams working on it and the right set of resources working on it. But I think you can imagine, our announcement still stands, end of the year. But I think the big thing we want to make sure is show people how it is easy to kick off a control plane from Azure, target a resource zone. And this is key, which is make sure existing customers can target on-premises deployment because it's the one thing, it's loud and clear. Don't just make it a yet new architecture thing that's only working in public cloud. So we are putting more focus and energy to make sure it works with our existing on-premises product because that's frankly where all the customers are.
And so, that is kind of like the big selling point of it too. So I feel like you've got to have in your first public release, it's got to hit. But so the intentions of first public release of CWS, it allows you to take your existing on-prem Zen app and Zen desktop, which maybe that's a service pack that updates them, or maybe it's next for like whatever. But it's the old way of doing it, as well as it has these resource zones that could exist in a full cloud architecture or cloud infrastructure. So this is like the Zen app or Zen desktop for AWS or whatever it happens to be.
That's right.
And then so I'll be able to manage. I'll be able to use CWS to manage my existing on-prem Zen desktop, Zen app.
Which is the key value, right? We want to be able to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like first pass.
MVP, minimum viable product. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And also there's a sliding scale on what that management means as well, right? So you got to be, how you do it. And it's and when I say a sliding scale, it's like, okay, there's, step one, which is being able to integrate with your existing on-premise infrastructure so you can have a single storefront at scale or single way to provision everything else, identity management, all that stuff. And over time, I think you can think about more and more simplified management and monitoring and everything else.
And then is that, will I be able to sort of load balance back and forth or fail over between the two styles, like the traditional Zen app, Zen desktop, and the more cloud-based ones?
I'll make a directional statement, yes. But, you got to remember, we had a lot of code to get delivered first. I think the biggest issue we hear from customers is, hey, can I just get visibility? Can I get analytics on how's my on-premises installation doing? Where are the users? How are they using the desktops? What kind of quality of service are they getting? I have a new office in the Philippines. I don't want to buy new machines. I want to just punch out 35 desktops and just deliver them with the image that we have. So
image works across.
Yeah, with the storefront. Right? Today, a lot of DAS providers, it's the image they have.
Yeah.
It's not the image you want for your company. Well, all those are things that we have to provide because that's what our customers expect. And so those are all benefits that will accrue towards being able to do it on-premises, which we do today, as well as the cloud.
How are the... Oh, go on, Sridhar.
No, sorry, just to add to that, I think the biggest benefit is to kind of, do that bridge between on-prem and cloud and that sliding scale of getting better and better over time.
Yes, because remember, this is not a flip, right? Yeah. I mean, this is a different gradations in which people will adopt it. And I think we want to make sure on-premise is a first-class citizen because it's where our customers are going to look for help from us.
That's actually, I feel like, maybe the clutch statement of this entire podcast right there. because it really is. And this is the on-premises is where the customers are today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you hear people talk about the cloud, it's still this fear, like, I don't want Citrix to force me to go to the cloud, or I don't want to lose, you can pry my metal boxes out of my cold dead fingers kind of thing.
That's right.
Yeah, and I know we spend a lot of time on CWS and cloud as well, but I mean, to your point, I mean, that's, and I think Rakesh said it the right way, which is like, that's a core part of what we're doing, which is make them successful and on-prem and kind of build a bridge for them to go into the cloud, right? It's not like, oh, sorry, we're not doing anything, go to the cloud. That's not
We don't think of it, I mean, I know you said it, we don't think of it almost as an old way of doing it or a new way of doing it. I think it's all the architecture changes that are happening in front of us in the industry. And it's just like we face them. I think customers are facing them in larger numbers. And the reality is the lives of our customers today is an on-premises, and we have to make a great experience. Yeah. Not an okay, not a good enough, an okay, a great experience, and not at the cost of doing something in the cloud, because that's not what they're telling us. They're interested. They want to look into what the benefits are. They want to take advantage of it, but in a spectrum and a sliding scale, as Sridhar mentioned.
So it's funny. You talk. We used this phrase a few times about the bridge to the cloud and that kind of stuff. And I was thinking, a bridge. This is going to sound weird. Like, I'm a marketing person, but a bridge is you're going from point A to point B across this chasm, and really, you don't want a bridge. You want to fill the chasm with dirt, so there is no chasm anymore. Because it's all one. It's all the playa or whatever. It's not like there's that and this bridge connects you sort of temporarily in between, and then you blow the bridge up behind you once you get to the other side. It's no. We just get rid of that, and it just in the future, it's not an old way or the new way. It's just like the way.
That's right. That's right. I think people talk about it as migration sometimes. I don't think it's migration. It's like more integration. It's you have that and you have this. And the reality is both are meant to be different avenues for customers to service their customers, right? So I think we think of the integrating both architectures, both worlds, because I think the reality is, as anything else in the computer industry, the tech industry, both will be there. And so our job, we feel, is to make sure that on-premises customers derive great value and continue to, because our journey still, you know, continues to be innovating there. At the same time, providing them a way to go to the cloud and test things out in the cloud and make that real. Because I think the adoption really takes off once they know that they have the flexibility to do both. And then both work so seamlessly that now they're not thinking about it's one or the other anymore. I think it is incumbent on all of us in the industry, all the vendors, to make sure the customers feel that sense of, yeah, it's not a big deal. But today it's not. Today it's more of a, hey, am I making a bet? And bet is always not necessarily, it could go bad.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure we integrate and help the customers, not just migrate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, agreed.
I'm writing that down. Like, I like that. Like, we don't want our customers to make a bet. I mean, that's the, and I guess I can't emphasize that enough about how this is just, we're talking, this is just the way it, like I said, this is what ZenApp is in the future.
It's kind of goes to the anyness principle, right? It's like, you know, customers don't have to pay.
Mm-hmm. But a big portion of that, right, is that I think anytime you ask customers to bet that way, you know, it sounds great on paper. It sounds great for a headline. But the reality is people who have to do this work understand, you know, how difficult these things are. So the lower we reduce the risk of people having to do that while giving them the benefits, why not? Why not enjoy both of it? And this is a progression in time, I think. I think we just have to be realistic in tech industry. All the marketing literature will not make the fact that a ZenApp Zen Desktop admin has to still do this work.
So, random question. You mentioned Arthur, which I assume you had released Excalibur and Merlin. I hadn't heard Arthur before. So is that?
Yeah, so Project Arthur is the next release for ZenApp and Zen Desktop.
And these have now one, these are kind of more integrated in that they have like one project. Like there's not like a project for Zen Desktop and a separate project for ZenApp.
No, it's
like
one.
No, it's all one. That was the whole unification on single architecture release and everything else, right? So there's a lot of focus. And we talked a little bit about that synergy as well, though not timelines or names. But, you know, a big focus of that is, you know, bringing a lot of the value functionality back for ZenApp customers, plus innovating in other areas. We're doing it on, you know, for example, we talked about Chrome App and receivers and Mac and other stuff. So a pretty exciting release, to be honest.
What is that first thing you said? Chrome App?
Chrome.
Oh, Chrome App. Sorry, okay, Chrome App. That makes more sense. and so Arthur is, that's what's next. And I guess 7.5 was Merlin, right? So,
that's correct.
And that was not that long ago. That only came out a month ago or
March.
Something?
March? It came out in March.
Holy moly, it's been so fast.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine a lot of this cloud stuff. So this happens with service providers too, and I don't know how much either of you two engage with the service providers. Like when Citrix announced CWS at Synergy, so there was, you know, the Synergy, for those of you who weren't there, there's like two main hotels, and they were across this kind of breezeway, and when you walked between those hotels in the evening, you ran into like tons of drunk Synergy attendees, and I don't know how many like CSPs I ran into, they're like, "Ah, oh, I can't believe they're screwing us, man. Like, we're not going to have a job anymore." And I'm like, what? Because, like, if everything is, you know, sort of automated and all that kind of stuff, I'm like, but again, this seems like it's even better because now you can just plug whatever offerings you're doing into this existing infrastructure. And if you want to host infrastructure, you can. If you want to get out of the infrastructure business and then you make your value on top of AWS that is now plugging into, you know, CWS, then that's all fine. And I feel like once you actually sort of explain this to people, they kind of get it and they feel better about it. Is that a similar kind of thing that's happening with this sort of on-prem versus cloud? Like, I, you know, the reaction to CWS was, well, you know, my reaction was like, I loved it. I was super excited. I was like, thank you for not doing this DAS thing. I was talking about, like, this is better. This is the future. This is awesome. You know, obviously, when can I have it? But I found that my reaction of, like, you know, open, like, hearts flying out of my eyeballs at this technology, at this concept, which people, to be fair, Citrix didn't invent this. There's a lot of companies that are talking about this sort of stuff, and that's good because I want every company to do this because it's awesome.
But
did people get that? Because I feel like I talked to a lot of people about it, and they, like, don't think it's cool. And I'm like, really? Let me explain it again. And
let me take a crack at it. I think the way to think about the introduction of CWS is there's a lot of people who provide infrastructure. We said, hey, look, that's not where we're placing our engineering resources to go build.
So you mean infrastructure? You're talking about people who provide infrastructure, Microsoft with Azure, AWS, VMware.
Building hardware racks, data center. I think there's a whole line of people who do that, and they do a great job. And so I think partners there would have to think about, okay, so that's the business I am in. So that's that class of people. Then there's a class of people who install the Citrix software. If that's the only value you provide, I can see how you're not happy because we are automating that layer. That's not a lot of them, frankly. But if that's the only value add you have as a provider, I think I can see where they're coming from. But the majority of service providers, it's like, you know, you want to provide a law practice or a dental office practice with a very particular vertical function. Those guys are thrilled because the problem all these guys have is they're all inventing one at a time because you have all these CSPs that have different architectures of putting the software together and it works. And then you find out they have to do an upgrade and then they have to reinvent the wheel. So we're helping and removing that friction of installation and running of the Citrix layer. If we make that uniform for them, I think the real value add they provide to the end customers, which we can never can, I think is the area where they can profit from. And I think that's the thing that I think if it didn't come across, we need to do a better job of that.
Well, so I was going to say, in that same question now, that's from a provider standpoint. How about from the end customer standpoint? Do you feel like they get, people sort of get what CWS is and what it means? Or cause I feel like people hear Azure and they're like, oh, I don't want my servers in Azure. And I'm like, no. Like, let me explain what Azure is doing here. It's not.
Right. I think it will. But really, Brian, at the end of the day, we could talk all we want. But unless they can go to a portal.
Yeah, that's true.
Sign up.
Yeah.
It won't be real, regardless of what marketing we do, right? So I think, you know, going to Citrix.com, signing up for a service that is provided by a partner that happens to, you know, go on Azure to control a deployment, which happens to be an AWS or a private data center, until that actually happens, I think people will be non-believers, and they should be. I think it's ours to prove. I'm reasonably optimistic and looking forward to that, just because of the development work that is going on, very smart people working on it. But I think I would say to you that we need to obviously do a better job of articulating it. But I'm being a product guy all my life. I'd rather see it. I'd rather play with it. Then I'll believe you.
So you can
and from an additional standpoint there, it's really hard to find providers now that are even offering these services just because the provider portal is very hard to navigate. And
that's
so, like you say, go to Citrix.com. I want to sign up for something in five clicks and a couple of forms, and that's it. And I think that has to happen.
Yeah,
because otherwise, people are just going to be curious about it, go look, have a hard time, and then give up.
That's right.
I like that.
The extension to that also, Gabe, is that, you know, once you do that, there's this other side that comes up. It's like, oh, so you guys are doing it. You're going to compete with me. That's not the message. I mean, this is all partners providing the functionality through that site. It's just an easier destination for people to go to find it, sign up for it, get it delivered, right? So we want to enable that experience, but we absolutely continue to be a partner-focused company, and that won't change.
Yeah, and I also call there's always a last-mile problem for us, right? I mean, being in the technology space, we understand what it takes to get the applications, the desktops, the, you know, all the kind of, you know, running itself for that specific customer and integrating other services and things, right? So there's a lot of innovation. The service providers can easily build now on top of the platform and don't have to worry about, you know, the inner workings of the platform, the infrastructure where they're running, right? So they can focus on that. And that's a problem that we can't solve. I mean, being close to the customer and their needs, that's the value they're going to, you know, build. And whether we give it to them or, like, somebody else does it, like AWS, they're going to go. So
So our hour's over now.
Wow, okay.
I don't know whether you have sort of some final thoughts that you want to share. I got like 5 ideas for articles out of this podcast, so this is
looks
awesome.
Looks like it worked for you.
Yeah. It's great. And I don't know, just I enjoy having these kinds of conversations around the direction of future and cloud. And I don't know, this is really great. So I appreciate you guys coming. But
same here, pleasure. So I'll close, but why don't you go first?
Sweetheart, last thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, we talked a lot about future cloud strategy and everything else. I think one thing I want to stress is, we have a huge customer base who are, passionate about running Zen Apps and desktop. And I think we didn't do a good job just messaging, transitioning the customer base. So that's definitely a huge priority for us. And, there's things we got to go fix, and there's things especially for some customers, we got to earn the trust back, but there's a lot of work that's already happening, right? And next July, it's going to be 14 years I've been in Citrix, right? And I'm not saying this lightly. I think we have the right leadership team, and we're doing the right things to actually, make it happen. So I've never been, more positive than ever before. So
so that's Sridhar Mallapudi. Congratulations on your 14th year in Citrix.
Sridhar wins.
Rakesh, any sort of final thoughts you want to share also?
Sure. I think it's similar in the sense that I think I have the enviable task of making sure that we make the transition. We have a large install base who we have committed to value, which we have delivered. But we have really the upcoming release and the one after that is I'm just amazed at how much value we'll be delivering. So that feels good. I think we have the right people working on it. We have the right organizational structure to do that. You and I talked about this when I met in San Francisco. All the innovations are on Mac, receivers, all coming. All of them are coming. So you won't be surprised.
HDX, a lot of stuff.
I mean, the amount of investment increase just on this area since I've come on board is something I'm pleased with, because I think, frankly, we've always needed it. But I think the product strategy, can easily get torqued by a lot of trends. And I just wanted to make sure that trends are good to keep track of. We can't forget our customers, right? So I think that's one thing that we're fixing. But I feel good about the value we're delivering and what is coming down the pike. At the same time, the other part of my task is to ensure that we deliver on the cloud side. And so, the team is working very hard, and we're freeing up resources in our teams to make sure that is working well. So, I've been through many different transitions. I've been in the mainframe to minis to workstations to PCs to client server. This one feels like yet another one of those things where there will be a lot of angst about this architectural change. In a few years, it'll be mainstream. It'll be people won't even think about it. People will be, this is the way to do it. But I think I continue to believe that the reason why I came to Citrix continues to be the same. It's great people, the product strategy, products, and a partner ecosystem that we care about. I think those three things are the reasons why I came to Citrix. And after being here almost 6 months now, it's not only the right choice, but I'm having a hell of a time. Because this is the thing I like to do, these transitions. And you do them well. I think the customers are happy with a good product set. And, of course, people will give us feedback. We look forward to that. But also adds value to the company and stockholders and employees, obviously. So that's what I look forward to. I'm looking forward to more of these, by the way. This doesn't have to be the one-off.
I like it. That's Rakesh Narasimhan, who's GM for Citrix's desktop products. Welcome to our family of the desktop virtualization world. I don't, Sridhar, I know you're on Twitter. People can tweet at you. I'll put your handle in the notes.
I do have it, but I don't tweet often enough unless I have something interesting to say.
Oh well, thank you for that. But we can tweet.
Yeah,
at
actually,
you.
That's better.
So I'll put both your Twitter handles in there. So thank you again both for joining. I'm really excited with the products that you have coming out. Well, CWS. I'm just really excited about CWS. And for me, being in this industry a long time, I feel like, as you're saying, this is also something that like actually changes the way things are. Because so far, what we've had with, from WinFrame to XenApp 7.5, like how different are those really? And like I feel like this is not. I mean, again, how different is Windows 8 from Windows NT 3.1? Like, of course,
right.
But I'm excited for this stuff.
That's great.
So Sridhar and Rakesh, thank you so much for joining. Gabe Knuth in Omaha, Nebraska, as always, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Thank you. Pleasure is all ours.
Justin Meisinger, our engineer. Mariah Lyons, our producer. And to all of you, thank you so much for listening. And we'll catch you on some future podcast on BrianMadden.com. And I'm Brian Madden from San Francisco. Goodbye.